views and opinions expressed during this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WHIO and Cox Media Group.
This hour is sponsored by SimTrainer.
We want to put you on the WHIO payroll.
I want to win so bad.
Win $1,000 cash 5 times every weekday.
Now you're talking.
The WHIO payroll payout is sponsored by SOCA, the Southern Ohio Chamber Alliance. Always looking out for the best interest of small business owners. You're on WHIO.
Good afternoon and welcome to this live broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. No, this is not an encore presentation. We are here live in the studio, or at least I am. I'm Mark Avery from SimTrainer, Dayton Area's first indoor range and firearms training center. You can visit us on the web at sim-trainer.com or call us at the range at 937-293-3914, or you can stop down and see us. The range is located at 2031 Dryden Road, right across from the DP&L Maintenance Yard, and at just south of the river. We'd be glad to discuss with you any of your firearms needs and interests. This is indeed a live show, so if you would like to get in on a show, I would encourage you to do that soonest. Don't wait for the end of the show. Last week, we had calls pile up right at the end of the show. I was lucky to get all of them in, but kind of had to rush through them. So if you have a question or comment, if you have something that you'd like to share with our audience or get some information on, this is a great day to do this. We weren't really expecting to have a show today because the football game was canceled. I'm in here and taking care of things, and I'm glad to be able to have this hour to spend with you. So give me a call at area code 937-457-1290. I'll get you up on the board. I'll get a little bit of what it is that you'd like to talk about from our producer, and then we'll get you up on the air as soon as we can. Again, the phone number here into the studio, area code 937-457-1290. We have lots of things that have gone on over the last week, as seems to always be the case. But there's some stuff coming up next week that I think I want you to be aware of. And we've talked about some of the ATF proposals that have been in comment periods on the regulations.gov website. Well, right now there's another one that's about to expire. So we talked about the question of what constitutes a firearm, what's a receiver, what part of the gun is a receiver, how much metal or machining or other requirements have to be already performed before the ATF considers it to be a receiver, which is then treated as a firearm and controlled as a firearm, has to be transferred with a background check and all of the things that go along with purchasing a firearm from a federally licensed firearms dealer. The deadline for comments on stabilizing braces, which we've also talked about, the deadline on for comments on that particular rule closes out on September 8th. So that's next Wednesday. You've just got a few more days to do that. I would encourage you to be respectful, to be circumspect, to be analytical and professional about the comments that you submit. I haven't read through a lot of those comments yet, but I did read through a lot of the comments on the receivers and the question about what constitutes a receiver. Some of those were just attacks at the ATF. And while you may believe that the ATF is a problem, and I understand certainly that certainly the leadership in the ATF has been a problem and has done things that are, in my view, outside the scope of their authority. But those kinds of comments aren't going to sway them regarding whether or not braces should be allowed to be continued and what the standards should be for determining whether a pistol brace is in fact a brace or it's a stock and therefore converts that pistol, an AR-style pistol typically, into what is then controlled as a short-barreled rifle. So if you are interested in that issue, and I think gun owners in generally should be interested in that issue, anything where the ATF is about to change rules without changing laws and therefore not going through Congress and not having congressional review and not having the opportunity for opposition comment and amendments and so forth. I think this is something that we as a gun owning community should be interested in. Even if you don't have an AR pistol, and I don't have one. I am probably in the process of building one. I have a receiver that may turn into an AR pistol at some point when I get parts and time and a lot of other things that would have to go with it. But the ability to do that and put a stabilizing brace on it to make it more effective and make it easier to use and shoot accurately as a pistol. Again, I'm not talking about the problem of saying, well, I don't want to register a short-barreled rifle. I just want it to be called a pistol, and I'm going to use it whatever way I want. I think that's part of why we are in this position is because, in fact, some of the marketing from some of the manufacturers has given the impression that that's exactly what they're doing. They're encouraging people to use it as a short-barreled rifle and recognizing that it's a way around the ATF requirements. And it's not just the ATF requirements, it's the legal requirements that short-barreled rifles are to be regulated and controlled under the National Firearms Act. You can argue with whether or not you think that is reasonable, whether that's correct, whether that's an infringement on your right to keep and bear arms. I get all of those arguments. But that isn't what this is about. This is if you talk about in your response to this, your comments on this include things that short-barreled rifles should not be regulated under the National Firearms Act. That comment is going to simply be discarded by the ATF because that's not the question at hand. What they're talking about is whether or not a pistol brace is in fact a brace or it's a stock, and they have put together a list of criteria, and they use that list to score a particular configuration. And if that configuration scores more than a certain number of points, then it has to have certain regulations and other things come into effect. So if you haven't read that, I would encourage you to do that. The docket number is ATF 2021R-08. So if you go to regulations.gov, you can look it up based on that number. Again, that number is ATF 2021R-08, and you'll be able to find it there. There are other places where you can find that linked. There are many articles relating to this and talking about things. The Second Amendment Foundation has submitted comments already, and if you are interested in what those comments are, you can go to SAF.org, S-A-F.org, and take a look at their comments. They have put together some information for people who are planning on making comments and who are interested in this issue. They tell you how you go about submitting those comments and some of the administrative details, like, for instance, that docket number that I just told you. Your comments, and this is important, your comments should be original. So if you are taking somebody else's comments and then reposting them as your own, they're not going to consider those. They just throw out duplicate comments. So make sure that they're your own thoughts. They describe how these particular changes in the regulation would affect you. As I mentioned before, they need to be professional. They will simply discard any comments with profanity or other inappropriate content. And in this case, inappropriate includes simply attacks on the ATF, no matter whether the arguments in those attacks are accurate or not. They're not relevant to this particular question, and they'll just discard them. The main thing is to describe how the changes that are proposed in this rule would affect you as the person submitting the comments. So you can go read other people's comments. You can go get ideas from the comments that the Second Amendment Foundation has submitted. You can go to the National Rifle Association, which also has a stake in this particular issue, and get some ideas about things. But you need to really tailor those comments to your own if you want those comments to be listened to, if you want them to be paid attention to, and to have any effect at all on the final outcome of the decision that is made. Now, as we've talked about before, the comments on the receivers rule have been closed now since the middle of August. So, and we don't yet have any kind of feedback from the ATF. We know that nearly 300,000 comments were received. I don't know what the number is on this. I forgot to check before I came over to the studio. But we know that that 300,000 comments is a huge number of comments. That's way over the normal numbers of comments. I mean, ordinarily, the number of comments that are received for any proposed regulation change at regulations.gov is usually less than 100 for the vast majority of them. And then there are others that receive upwards of 1,000, but almost 300,000 comments is way, way above normal. So it will be hard to just say, oh, well, we, you know, there wasn't anything useful submitted in any of those comments. But on the other hand, the ATF takes those comments under advisement and they do what they're going to do. So the more compelling your argument, the more articulate, the more polite and professional those comments are, the more likely that there's going to be some sort of change from what gets implemented to what has been proposed. And I would strongly recommend that you take a look at those, that you read through those comments and make sure that your comments are submitted in the same vein, but they are absolutely your comments, not comments that others have said and that you are now just joining on and piling on with. So director of the Second Amendment Foundation, Alan Gottlieb, said, we can't overemphasize the urgency here. Gun owners need to submit their comments now. This is just one more manifestation of the Biden administration's effort to crack down on gun owners and the Second Amendment. And I don't disagree with that. I don't think it's entirely Biden administration. We certainly saw many changes into the rules that the ATF put in place. For instance, the bump stock regulation, that was not a Biden thing. Certainly he would have supported it, and he's made no bones about how much he proposes and encourages restrictions on the right to keep and bear arms against law-abiding citizens, even though he doesn't want to point it that way. But all the proposals that he has submitted, that he talked about during the campaign, that he has talked about since taking office, all of those things make it very clear that he is not going to do anything that is going to restrict the ATF from imposing rules that cause restrictions on us, law-abiding gun owners. So the best way for you to get your comments submitted, again, go to regulations.gov and look up that ATF 2021-R-08 docket number and make your comments as associated with it. I mentioned also bump stocks, and that's kind of an interesting development that has occurred in just the last week or so. The National Rifle Association has submitted an amicus brief to the Supreme Court encouraging them to take up the bump stock case. There have been lawsuits associated with the bump stock case and the decision that basically said bump stocks turn semi-automatic weapons into automatic weapons, but without doing anything to the trigger system, which is the way that an automatic weapon is defined in the law and is defined in ATF regulations. And they said, well, we'll just add the way it works as part of the definition, even though it completely goes against the legal definition in both the law and in previous ATF regulations. The ATF has been sued by several groups. The Firearms Policy Coalition is one of them. And that lawsuit has maintained. It's still not expired. And they are encouraging, the NRA has submitted an amicus brief encouraging the Supreme Court to hear this case and make a decision once and for all. Does the law mean what it actually says? Or is it okay for government agencies to expand the scope of the law through regulation and change the inherent meaning of that law by changing the regulations and changing the way certain terms are defined? Those terms, in some cases, were defined in the law, and in other cases, they are commonly used definitions, but the ATF is saying, well, we're going to define it in a particular way that then rolls the whatever the weapon is or the device is, rolls it in under their ability to regulate things at a higher and more strict level. So I think that's an interesting case. I think that that the fact that the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action has weighed in on that and has submitted an amicus brief to the Supreme Court and asked them to consider that case, I think that's interesting. I think that's probably good news for us. And I think it also tells you something about what the core people working in the NRA below the high levels really think about what is going on here. Yes, they want to restore your right to keep and bear arms and to protect it from being further infringed. I think there's a lot of people who have taken some serious shots at the NRA, and I think a lot of those are warranted because of things that have gone on at the headquarters. But when you look at what's going on down below that level and look at, for instance, the actions of the ILA, the Institute for Legislative Action, and that's one of those organizations that does a lot of the legal and the work associated with updating the laws and making sure that the laws that are proposed are put in correctly and that they don't infringe further the right to keep and bear arms. So those of you who say, well, I don't want anything to do with the NRA because until we get their problem solved, I'm not going to have anything to do with it. I understand that philosophy, but I would encourage you to also look at some of the other things that are going on. And I mentioned that this weekend being when would have been the National Rifle Association 150th annual meeting and convention. And clearly it didn't happen because it was canceled just about a week ago. So that's part of the reason I'm also here is because we didn't go down there. I'm going to leave that for now, but I would encourage you to take a look at those things, and especially if you're interested in the pistol brace issue, to craft a very articulate response and post that to regulations.gov. All right, I am going to take a first break for the hour. If you would like to be part of the show, and I would really love to have your calls, call the studio at 937-457-1290, and we'll get you up on the air. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip on 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk.
It's an Ask the Expert weekend on Dayton and Springfield's 24-hour news, weather, and traffic station, 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk. It's our Ask the Expert weekend on the Miami Valley radio station with breaking news, weather, and traffic, 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip. If you would like to be part of today's show, give me a call at 937-457-1290. This is a live show, and I'd be happy to take your calls. Whatever the kinds of questions that you might have, I may not have a good answer for it, but I'm not going to make one up. So if I don't have an answer, we'll take it and try to answer it in another show. You can also contact us by going to our website at sim-trainer.com and click on the contact link, and that will take you to a form where you can send us an email, and then all of us that need it get it. So if you would like to ask a question or ask for, you know, maybe provide some comments on things that we've talked about on the show, that's a great way that you can do that as well. This, we have just now stepped into the month of September. Today is just the 4th. So it's time to talk about what happened last month. And one of those things was that Americans bought another record number of guns, not a top record, but the second place August ever. We have seen a trend of large numbers of firearms being purchased. To some extent, the guns that have purchased have been the guns that have been available. But as some of the major manufacturers now have their production capacity ramped up, we're seeing also record profits by some of those firearms manufacturers because they're providing the firearms that people really want. And once they were able to get back into full production and get some of these guns out the door, those guns are being bought by people in record numbers. August was the second highest August ever. And the only higher month was August of 2020. So that is it's right in line with what we've seen for the last several months. We've had high records. I mean, the records were just highest ever for that month, all the way up through February of this year. There hasn't ever been a higher February before the February of this year, and February of 2020 was a close second. And then beyond that, that's when in March, when all the lockdowns really started getting active, people started buying guns, and the highest month ever was March of 2020, and it has kind of stayed that way throughout the time since then. We've been at much higher levels than we've seen in the past. So it's not surprising that once again in August, We're at the second highest number of guns ever purchased in 1 month. Now, one of the things that we don't have is an absolute picture as to how many guns that really is. The estimate now is about 1.3 million guns, and that's based on the National Shooting Sports Foundation analysis of the National Instant Check System, the NICS system that the FBI does to support folks like us, the gun dealers, federally owned federal firearms licensee holders who sell firearms. We have a requirement to run a background check. Now, Ohio and 24 other states have some alternative method for doing that background check. So that means that if you have, in Ohio, for example, a concealed handgun license, you don't necessarily have to go through a background check every time you purchase a firearm. So if you went through the background check to get your concealed handgun license, and all current licenses now have been through that, if your license hasn't expired, you had that background check as part of the process to get your license. So if you go to a gun dealer, we can look at your license, see that it's current, see that it was issued after the beginning of date, which is back in 2015, and then we can sell you a gun by just putting down the information from your license without actually having to go to the FBI and run the check. So the FBI numbers only count the numbers of checks that they actually see. It doesn't include any checks that we do based on the fact that you have a concealed handgun license. So the number of 1.3 million is probably low. We know that we've sold a lot of guns to people who already had concealed handgun licenses, and they're not counted in that number. And as I mentioned, half of the states, 25 total states, including Ohio, 25 states have some means of conducting a background check that doesn't go through the National Instant Check System. So all of those states, any firearms that were purchased in those states don't show up in this total. So my guess is that the 1.3 is probably on the low side of reality. But from a relative gauge, it certainly does give us information that says, okay, there have been a lot more guns being sold based on these numbers that we get from the National Instant Check System. The National Shooting Sports Foundation removes from the gross number of background checks that were run, they remove things that are clearly not associated with the purchase of a firearm. For example, the kinds of checks that a sheriff would run in order to issue a concealed handgun license, those background checks are removed from the total. And those are all broken out by the ATF, so it's possible to do that. They remove those numbers from the count so that they have a little bit better picture as to how many guns were actually purchased. But again, as I mentioned, and in fact they talk about in their report, they don't know all of the numbers because all of the numbers don't require a background check through the FBI. So what does this mean? It means that there are a lot of people who are buying guns. And last year, we saw about 9 million people who purchased guns for the first time, had never been a gun owner before, and that drastically changes the landscape for the, in my view, the gun rights community in this country, because people who never really took an interest before have now started to buy firearms and find that that's something that they think is becoming important. I think that bodes well for us for the long term. Right, we need to take a break now, and we are going to go out into the news. But if you'd like to call the show, give me a call at 937-457-1290, and I'll get you on the air. This is Mark Avery for Shooting From the Hip on 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk.
It's an Ask the Expert weekend on Dayton and Springfield's 24-hour news, weather, and traffic station, 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk. It's our Ask the Expert weekend on the Miami Valley radio station with breaking news, weather, and traffic, 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery for Shooting From the Hip. If you are interested in being part of the show, please call the studio at 937-457-1290. Get some information from you, and I'll try to get you up on the air as soon as I can. I would like to talk about something that's coming up here fairly soon, and that is the basic handgun class and the concealed carry classes that we have at Sim Trainer. There's a basic handgun class actually tomorrow. There's room in that class if you're interested. Call the range at area code 937-293-3914. get signed up for that class. And then you can also sign up if you're interested in getting your concealed handgun license. Basic handgun is the best way to start. And then take the concealed carry class, which is the following weekend on Saturday, September 11th. Great way to recognize the threat that was to this country that we remember that day. And that class is from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday, September 11th. So if you are interested in getting both of those classes, probably the best way to do that is to get our training pass. Our training pass is $200, which is the same price as it would be to buy both of the two classes. But it also includes a three-month membership to the range, so you can come back and practice. You can get a lane and shoot. There's no additional charge for that. Everything is included in that three-month membership, all your use of the range. Obviously, you'll still need to buy ammunition. You'll need to buy targets and whatever the supplies that you want. But for that 3 months after you take the basic handgun class, which would be tomorrow on September 5th, when you take that class, that's when your membership starts and it's good for 3 months. So if you're interested in that, we also give you access to the firearms that you use during the basic handgun class. You'll select one that is your favorite, the one that you think is the right one for you, and then you'll be able to use that class, that firearm, at no additional charge when you take the concealed carry class the following weekend. And hopefully you'll have come back during that week to practice a little bit and get that much more comfortable, practice some of the skills and drills that you'll get to do in the basic handgun class, so that you'll be more comfortable when it comes time to take the qualification course of fire for the concealed carry class. You'll have that locked in and wired. That'll be a pretty low stress operation. We have people that come and take the basic handgun class who don't have an intention to get a concealed handgun license, but more of a problem is people who take the concealed carry class without first having any firearms training or experience. Now, doesn't necessarily mean you have to have had a class, although that is a really good way to do it, but especially if you want to get up to speed quickly. Now, we can do in the 4 hours of that class, we can get you to a point of proficiency that a lot of people never get to if they haven't had a class and they haven't studied and worked through specific drills to improve their skill set. They might never get to those levels. And that's what we try to do in a very short period of time, is to give you the skills that you need to be effective and accurate and safe, especially with your firearm. So that's what we do in the basic handgun class. And that's why we encourage people to take that class before they take concealed carry. It's not an absolute prerequisite, because a lot of people have firearms experience that they've gotten from a lifetime of using firearms. And we understand that, so we don't make it a requirement that you take the basic handgun class first. But if you are new to firearms, if especially handguns is something that you've not done a lot, maybe you've used shotguns and rifles, but handguns is a little bit new to you, we really encourage you to get the basic handgun class first and then take the concealed carry class, because it really works better for you. People who have tried to do that either backwards, take the concealed carry first and then come back and take basic handgun because they realized they didn't have the skills they needed, or they just tough it out and make it through the concealed carry class, but it is so much more stressful to do it that way. So again, I would encourage you, call the range at 293-3914, get signed up for both classes, and if you do that, the training pass is the best way to do that. So again, I'd encourage you, if you are looking to up your self-defense capability, the defense of your home capability, that you get the training that's necessary to do that. And again, we have a class tomorrow for basic handgun and then next Saturday for concealed carry. This week, something that doesn't directly affect us in the state of Ohio, but I think it's worth discussing because of some of the implications that have come out from it ever since. And that is that North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper vetoed a bill that would have repealed the state's pistol purchase permit law. And that law basically says you can't just go to the store and pass the background check through the NICS. You have to get a special purchase permit from the sheriff in order to go to the store and purchase a firearm. And it doesn't even have to be from a store. That includes any private sales. You still have to have that pistol purchase permit before you could do that. And the House Bill 398 in North Carolina would have repealed that law. It passed both houses, not by huge margins, but by enough of a margin that that the law went to the governor's desk. Then the governor decided that he was not going to sign that bill. He vetoed the bill. And his argument is that, you know, this is a time of rising gun violence and they can't afford to repeal a system that works to save lives. Well, there's a lot of problems with that statement. First, there's no evidence that restricting law-abiding citizens from purchasing a firearm before they go through some additional pre-qualification check does anything to save lives. In fact, there are several instances where one could make the argument it actually reduces the ability of people who are at risk to defend themselves, and by doing so, puts them at greater risk. Of course, opponents of the bill cheered the governor's decision, and they thanked him for vetoing this so-called reckless bill. They parrot the governor's comments about keeping North Carolinians safe, but those who supported the bill criticized the decision and accused him of obstructing much-needed reform that isn't really adding any value, because the ability to get that same instant background check through the FBI NICS system, especially since North Carolina had gone through a special effort to update the records at NICS to reflect all of the same information that they were using within the state in order to do the background checks associated with granting a pistol permit. And what is the source of this law? Well, it's 102 years old. It was done during the aftermath of the Civil War, and it is essentially a bill that was put together in order to make it more difficult for freed slaves to be able to get firearms and to purchase those firearms easily. Deputy governor has really been kind of upset about the fact that this bill was vetoed, because he supported it. He's a black man, and he says that this bill was completely it's doing nothing to make things more dangerous, so it should have passed. But it's also a bill that was born out of racism, and by keeping this bill in place, they're keeping some of the racist background for that bill and making it more difficult for people. Now, the bill has changed, or the way that those checks have changed, it has been made more neutral throughout the year. It applies to everyone instead of simply those people who were freed slaves, which was the original definition for who had to have special background checks. So I think the fact that we're seeing from people who are affected by this and have been affected by this for decades coming out and saying gun control is not what you might think it is. It's not about safety, even though that's the way the gun control advocates typically advertise and push their controls, their new regulations. They do it based on gun safety. But it's not about gun safety, it's about control. And those controls, especially with respect to firearms, have tremendously racist roots in the way that when emancipation was mandated, dictated, as is the view of those slave-owning states, when it was forced on them, they said, well, we're going to retain certain other controls and we're going to do that this way. And one of the ways they did that was by making sure that the freed slaves would not be able to arm themselves and be able to defend themselves then when some of the other things of the Jim Crow laws went into effect. So I think the fact that the lieutenant governor has come out and said, this was a wrong thing to do, governor, you should not have vetoed this bill. This bill should have gone forward because it levels the playing field for everyone. It reduces a barrier to entry to owning a firearm by law-abiding gun owners. It leaves all the barriers in place for criminals and people with a criminal history from being able to purchase firearms. You can argue whether that's a good thing or not. But those are not being restricted in any way, and transitioning from their local state background check process for purchasing a firearm as a prerequisite for being able to do so, and transitioning that to the national system, which has all the same information that the local system had, but is able to do that background check much more quickly and much more efficiently without causing a delay and restricting people from being able to get the firearm when they'd like to. That's one of the reasons why he thought that that bill should have been signed. I think it's interesting that is his position, and that he's taking a stand and is actually making that stand public, going against the governor in the governor's actions and making it that much more obvious that these kinds of restrictions aren't doing anything to make anyone more safe, but they are causing more problems for people, especially in a time when gun sales are through the roof and the sheriff's office doesn't have the capability to process all of those requests for purchase permits in a timely fashion, and the log was getting backed up. People weren't able to get it. So why is it that we have in fact had all of these extra gun purchases? Why is it that people are doing this? We don't know necessarily. I think we have anecdotal evidence to suggest that people have taken what they've seen of the riots from last year, the increase in government restrictions based on the COVID-19 and all of the mandates that went associated with that, in some cases overreach. We certainly had plenty of that here in the state of Ohio, and the legislature stepped in and said, that's enough, we're not going to take any more of this, and any new mandates that come out or anything that's already in place is going to have to get a review by the legislature, and they have a certain period of time when the restrictions could be in place without a review, and then after that, the review would go into place and could completely eliminate anything that the governor has done or based on actions that were taken at the governor's direction or at his encouragement. So I think that that may be part of why. Is it a new normal? It seems like it is a new normal. And the gun manufacturers are certainly finding that their numbers, even though the total number of sales may have dropped a little bit from last year, the sales that are from the major gun manufacturers are not going down at all. Now, we also had the Biden administration restricting the importation of guns made in Russia, guns and ammunition made in Russia. And if anything, that benefits the United States firearms industry and some of the other countries that also ship in. We have firearms that come in from all over the world. Taurus, for example, from Brazil. That's a very popular gun. A lot of people purchase. It's not one of the ones that we sell, but that doesn't mean that that there aren't a lot of them being sold. We do see that Ruger had an amazing year this last year, and those numbers continue to increase. They come out with new guns that people like, and so, when you know you provide a product that people like, and they will come to your door and they will buy that product and they will continue to support that product. I think that is some of what we're seeing. The other thing is that Winchester, which is now primarily a ammunition manufacturer, they saw a huge increase as well. They went from a $22 million loss to a almost $600 million profit just because of the amount of guns, and plus they had some reorganizing they had to do. They had some plant renovations that were needed in order to be able to increase their production. But as a result, they have started to produce additional ammunition, and there's no indication that the demand for ammunition is backing off at all. In fact, if you've been to the stores, you can see that there is more ammunition available, but the prices are still somewhat elevated from what they were pre-pandemic. And part of that, and in fact, a major portion of that, is supply and demand and all the costs associated with increasing production. People say, well, I mean, they were making ammunition before, weren't they? Yeah, they were, but they weren't making it at this level and have never made it at this level for this long a period of time. So I think that's a major portion of it, and we'll see how this continues. We'll pay attention to it. And that's what we'll do here at Sim Trainer and Shooting from the Hip as well. Let's take our final break for the hour. Again, if you'd like to get in on the last bit of the show, call the studio at 937-457-1290, and I'll get your question on the air. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip on 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk.
It's an Ask the Expert weekend on Dayton and Springfield's 24-hour news, weather, and traffic station. 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk. It's our Ask the Expert weekend on the Miami Valley radio station with breaking news, weather, and traffic. 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip. If you would like to be part of the last few minutes of the show, please call the studio at 457-1290, and I'll try to get you in before we run out of time on the show. There has been a huge effort by those in the gun control community to try to make gun owners look like some sort of evil people, that anybody who supports owning firearms, there's something wrong with them. And part of their way to do that is to stigmatize firearms and legitimate gun owners and anybody who believes that same way. And one of the ways they do so is to make anything that looks like a gun or might be kind of gun-shaped, making that some sort of evil thing. And you've seen that in schools where kids have been kicked out of school for having holding their fingers up and pointing their fingers at someone and pretending guns, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid playing up cops and robbers and cowboys and Indians and anything having to do with chasing other kids around the neighborhood and setting up sides and you were using fingers or sticks or whatever, and you know, all of that stuff was normal kinds of play. But if you do that at school nowadays, you're likely to get disciplined in some way, whether it be Pop-Tarts or fingers or costume props and just plain old ordinary toys. We're seeing a lot of that. And now there's a study that's come out that says kids exposed to toy guns aren't prone to violence. And now I don't know why this is a surprise to anybody, but it certainly undercuts the concept that we should do something special. We should treat more evilly any kid that does anything having to do or shows any kind of interest with toy guns or anything that they pretend to be a gun. And now, at least, we see how misguided those reactions are. So there's nothing fundamentally wrong with pretending to play guns and to do gun things. Anytime you're talking about an actual projectile firing device, and I would include airsoft in that, I would include BB guns, paintball, any of those kinds of things, and that includes archery as well, then those firearms rules really need to be in place. For example, parents, if you've got kids that like to play those games, then recognize and teach them the four basic rules of firearm safety, that you treat every gun as if it's loaded, that you always keep it pointed in a safe direction and never at anything except something that is your target that you're intending to or at least willing to destroy, that you keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are aligned on the safe target and you've made the decision to fire, and that you always are aware of your target and what surrounding area is so that you know that where that round, whatever it is that you're going to fire, you know where that's going to stop and that that's a safe place. Those rules apply to anything that actually fires a projectile. But when you're talking about something that's clear plastic that fires bubbles and you're going to apply the same rules to those and the same penalties to those associated with that you would with an actual firearm, that is ridiculous. And in fact, what the studies are showing now is that, yes, in fact, it's ridiculous, and that there is no tendency towards violence as a result of having played with toys that looked like or were substitute for firearms. I think it's about time this kind of study comes out. I don't know that anybody will pay attention to it, but the fact that you're now aware of it, maybe when you see some of this nonsense show up in the schools, that you'll be able to counter it and say, that, look, this is completely ridiculous. It's not something that has any basis in fact. In fact, it's been studied and shown that there's clearly no correlation between kids playing with firearms or playing with gun-shaped objects and then later in life becoming violent. I think that's important information. I think it's important that we all recognize what the reality is in some of these things and makes it easier to take facts into a discussion. I know that a lot of these discussions aren't interested in facts, It's almost like you're firing this stuff into a fact-free zone, but it's important that the more people that do this, the more people that are informed, the less likely this nonsense is going to happen. And one other set of nonsense that has happened, you've seen what happened with the leaving of Afghanistan and some of the things that have happened. We had certainly a lot of weapons that were left behind by the Biden administration, who has made an absolute adamant position that we have to keep guns out of dangerous people's hands. And yet what they have done is to leave millions of dollars worth of equipment, 80 some million dollars worth of equipment that can be used as a lethal force in the hands of people who are inherently dangerous and have proven so to be so over the years. That's something that we need to pay attention to and be aware of. Thanks very much for being part of the show today. I don't know when I'll be back, but depending on when there's another football game that gets canceled, we may be here, or we'll be here on the 18th when there's a late game. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip on 1290 and 95.7 WHIO, Dayton's News and Talk.
WHIO Dayton, WHIO FM Pleasant Hill, a Cox Media Group station. Powered by Back to Business IT. Take care of your business. We'll take care of your IT.